This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 119 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. Fate Reforged is just around the corner, and here as always to help me navigate my way through the set is my very dear friend, Hallie Santo. Hello.
Hey, Erin.
Hi, welcome back.
Thanks. It's been a while.
Has it, though?
Well, relatively speaking.
I was going to say, you were here for the con show, right?
I was here for the con show, but before that, I was on, like, two other episodes in pretty quick succession, so now it feels weird that I've had, like, a three-month hiatus before I've been on the show again.
It's funny, though, and you know, I think about how much time has passed in between cons and now, and it really does feel like a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've even grown as a player a lot in the 3 months that have passed, so it does feel like a long time for me, too.
Yeah, speaking of your growth, congratulations on being part of the Gathering Magic family.
Thank you. Yeah, this has been something I've been working on for a while. Stibbs and I had been talking about it for a while, and it was finally the right time, so I sort of caught up with him, and now I'm writing what I hope is going to be a weekly column about tournament preparation.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we really need in this community, because I feel like, and having had a lot of pros on my show, I do feel like that's something a lot of people don't talk about, or that they give you the perception that it just sort of happened. I remember I was looking at the, if you read the Grand Prix coverage, they ask the top eight these questions, like, you know, where are you from? Have you had any previous success? And sometimes they'll ask them what they did to prepare, and I'm always surprised by these guys are like, I played Commander for 2 hours and then I showed up. And I'm like, and you top hot? And I do worry that gives people this idea that you too can just be eating SpaghettiOs and watching Casper and then go to a GP the next day. And that's not always the case. And I wish more people talked about that and said, hey, I was grinding MTGO for 9 hours a week, or I did this. And, you know, I think it's important to get that out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people like Sean McLaren really appeal to me, because he always talks about how, like, you know, he got to be where he is by, like, grinding on MTGO, and he makes it very clear that, like, that's what his preparation is. I feel like a lot of people don't talk about their preparation, or a lot of pros will sort of, like, meet up for a week beforehand, and then you're sort of left wondering, like, what they've been doing before that, and sort of like what their actual preparation method is, because it's all sort of very like clandestine. But I don't know. I just like to be transparent. I like to teach people. Mm-hmm. I've definitely learned a lot over the last 2.5 years that I've been playing Magic, and I want to share what I've learned with other players. And so that's what I've been doing with my blog for the last almost a year now, and what I would like to continue to do over here at Gathering Magic.
Mm-hmm. I also like Sean McLaren because of his lone wolf appeal, where, you know, part of the reason and how he got here was doing things by himself, where he didn't he wasn't with a big team. He wasn't doing what some pro told him to do. He was like, I think I'm going to do this. And it might be a little weird. It might be a little goofy, but I trust myself. And he's just defied so many of those stereotypes that we have, or, you know, he's broken those rules of this is what you have to do. And he's doing quite well with it.
Right.
So I can't really get behind the hair, though. Did you see that hair he had at Worlds? What was that?
It was a little blast from the past, 80s mullet style thing.
His hair was more feathered than Blair's from Facts of Life.
Oh, wow, you went deep on that one.
I have a great appreciation for the classics, the Golden Girls, Facts of Life. I'm there. So, yeah. So what have you been up to lately? You said that you felt like you've grown as a player, even in the short time since you've been on the show. So have you been in a lot of events?
I've been playing Standard a lot.
Okay.
So Over the last several months, I had actually spent most of the fall playing Limited, because I really liked Cons as a set, but I didn't really get it for the longest time. So I was having some health issues during October and couldn't really go to events. So I ended up just spending weeks and weeks grinding Cons 8/4s on Magic Online, and doing pretty well actually. And I was just playing a lot of Limited, and for a while I kind of got out of touch with Standard, and I realized that there was an SCG Open in Seattle coming up, and I knew nothing about Standard. So I was like, wow, what am I going to do? Like, what am I going to play in this event? So there was an IQ happening at a local store, and so I decided to just go, like, pick up a deck that I hadn't even really played much before and just go to this IQ and see what decks people were playing and see what I wanted to play in the open pretty much. I didn't really have expectations, but I went in playing the Mardu mid-range deck that ended up doing really well in the subsequent weeks. And the entire field was just blue-white heroic and like mono-red aggro. So both of which are very good matchups for Mardu. So I ended up top-8ing kind of unexpectedly. And I was really proud of myself. I was like, wow, I actually like made a good choice. I made a good deck choice. I made good choices in the games that I played. And I was really happy with the deck that I was playing. And then all of a sudden, all of the Abzan Whip decks started coming up. People were playing Abzan Whip, people were playing Sidisi Whip, because Sidisi Whip did really well at Worlds. And then all of a sudden, I was losing to all of those decks. And so I thought, okay, I need to switch gears. So I had two paths that I could take. I could either play a Whip deck myself, or I could play a deck that beats the Whip decks. And I decided to do the latter by picking up one of the Anafenza aggro decks that one of my friends had done well with at an event. And then I played in another event. It was a 4K at a local store. And I ended up making top 32 at that event.
Nice.
Again, completely unexpectedly, because I played against some Whip decks, and I played against, I think I played against both red green aggro and Teemer, which were pretty good matchups for me because I had four Bile Blights and boarded in Drown and Sorrow post board, and so I sort of cleared the way in the early game and put a lot of pressure on my opponent and ended up winning. So that was also very unexpected, but I've just sort of been like hopping around from standard deck to standard deck, making these metagame calls, which is not something that I normally do. Like, I'm normally the type of person who chooses a deck and learns it and sticks with it.
Me too.
But I decided to do this, and it's actually been working out pretty well for me. And I like it's not something that I advocate. Like, I don't advocate audibling for a tournament. But there is something to be said for knowing a format, and when you know a format and you can make an informed decision about what you should be playing or what you think will do well in that format, then that definitely gives you an edge also.
I think there's also something to be said for being the kind of player that can do that. I'm kind of a ride or die player myself when it comes to decks, but I admire those people where you can hand them a control deck, you can hand them a mid-range deck, you can hand them an aggro deck, and they're fine. One of my weaknesses is I tend to stay in my wheelhouse. Like I tend to only know mid-range decks, and let's say an aggro deck is really good at the moment. I can't just pick up an aggro deck and play it. I can't just pick up a control deck. Like that's my weakness, and I think that that says something about your growth as a player, where you're getting to that point where you can do that, because that's not something that just anybody can do.
Right, and it's something that I couldn't do for the longest time. Like, I was also the kind of person where I wanted to either be playing either a tempo strategy or a mid-range strategy, and like I couldn't play aggro for the longest time. I was a terrible aggro player. I always did my combat math wrong, and like I was always like very very lazy when it came to making those sorts of calculations. And I think just playing a lot of Limited has helped me with that, because Limited is so creature combat focus now.
Well, limited is also such a mixed bag where it's like, you know, I did a draft this past weekend in Omaha only because I was tilting and I didn't want to play modern anymore. So I threw myself into a draft. I don't usually like to draft. And I actually had a lot of fun with it. And I didn't think that I would. And, you know, you are sort of at the mercy of the packs. And, you know, let's say you get the cards and it's forcing you into Jeskai. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm playing a control deck. And, you know, sometimes you just have those cards passed to you that you can't really turn down. And you're like, all right, I'm going to play aggro right now. And it's just kind of meant to be in a way.
Yeah, that's why whenever I start out with a draft format, I consciously choose to play as many different strategies as possible for the first couple weeks, just so I get a sampling of all the different things you can do, so that when I am in more of like a high stakes situation where like I'm trying to pick the best card in every pack and I'm falling into a certain strategy, at least I'm somewhat familiar with it going into that.
So I was at a so where do you go next? Like, are there any other events coming your way, or what are you thinking?
So there are a couple GPs that I'm planning on going to soon. So there's GP San Jose, which is coming up. I unfortunately do not have a team yet for it, so I'm sort of on the fence about whether I should skip it or go and sort of enter the lottery of like trying to find a team at the last minute. I'm not sure about that, but
You've
I
got
am
one
definitely.
team member,
That's true.
Kirby.
Kirby doesn't have a DCI number
Oh,
yet.
you're not you don't you didn't give him a number yet? Jeez, slacking.
But anyway, I am planning on going to GP Vancouver in late February, which is modern. And I'm also planning on going to GP Vegas. So those are, I guess, the two things that are definitely on my radar.
I would love to go to Vancouver. I just didn't expect it to be as expensive as it was, and I'm pretty sure I would need a passport. I don't even know where to begin with that. So I think I'm just going to settle for SCG Baltimore myself. That'll be my modern experience in February. But Vancouver sounds like a blast, and I'm super jealous that you get to go.
We went to GP Vancouver last year. There was a GP Vancouver last January. It was standard, and Robert and I drove up and spent the weekend up there, and it was pretty cool. He did really well on day one. I think he just missed day two. Like he lost his winning in or something like that. But we ate a lot of poutine, and it was pretty awesome. Vancouver's a great city to visit.
No, I know you said you've been focusing on standard a lot lately. Do you know what you're going to play for modern?
I'm probably either going to play Blue Red Delver or maybe Jeskai Burn. Those
Hallie Elaine Santo.
You give me a different middle name every time.
What am I going to do with you? I got to do with you. So speaking of modern, I was at a GP Omaha this past weekend for the first modern GP of the new year, and had a lot of fun. Variance was not on my side. I played 8 rounds. I had one round that was a bye because of my Planeswalker points, and 5 of those rounds were against Birthing Pod.
Oh, geez.
I know, and Birthing Pod is not a good matchup for me. I didn't play Delver at all. I didn't play Affinity at all. I didn't play Control at all.
What were you playing?
I was piloting Abzan. I was on Junk.
Oh, cool.
And I faced Pod 5 times, and then I faced Goryeo's Vengeance, which I call a mercy fuck. I'd been doing so poorly that God was like, I'll just throw you a bone. Here, chew on this. And I won in like 10 minutes, so that was good. And then I played a Blue Moon.
Oh wow, I
That's.
didn't know that was still around.
Right? That was Ryan Hipp from TCG Player. He was playing that deck. And so that was a thing. And then I also played Burn. And I beat Burn, which is like a
Yay.
hug from Jesus. So that felt amazing, because I've never really beat Burn at all in Modern. So that felt really good. But it was fun. I just felt very, I was very. I was very bothered by the variance, where it's like really 5 times, and that wasn't good at all. And got to see a lot of really cool people. Ricky Hayashi was there, Arthur Halovas, who I love. Some pros were there, Reid Duke, Shahar Shenhar. My friend Jess was there. My friend Jamie was there. My friend Johnny Bailey was there. So many great faces, and it felt really good to be, you know, I'm an extrovert, just being around all those people again and just soaking up all that energy. So, but it did make me really excited for the upcoming banned and restricted announcement that is coming out on Monday. And very polarizing topic. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's very passionate about what they think needs to go or what they think needs to come back. What are you thinking? Like, what do you think Modern needs right now? What do you think we're going to see come Monday?
So I'm on the unbanned Bloodbraid Elf plan.
Oh, you've redeemed yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that Bloodbraid Elf was unfairly punished for Deathrite Shaman's sins. So I would like to see it come back. Like, Jund isn't really a popular deck in Modern anymore. And I think bringing Bloodbraid Elf back into the fray won't necessarily upset the balance of power too much. I am hoping, well, I don't know, like I've been looking at the different cards that could potentially get banned. Some people are speculating that Pod is going to get banned, but I don't think that's going to happen. Like, I think if Pod were to get banned, like it should have been banned. Like, if Wizards wanted to ban Pod, they would have banned it like a year ago.
Well, the problem with Pod, and as somebody who faced it 5 rounds out of 8,
Right.
is that Pod doesn't need Pod to do its thing. In fact, there were a number of matches I played where we got all the way to game 3, and I had a nice rapport with my opponent, and I would even say, like, look, you pretty much beat me. Do you even got any Pods in there? And they'd be like, yep, I'm just not drawing them. And they didn't need to, between the birds and the dorks and, your kitchen finks, every creature they have has a purpose.
Yeah, they're
And
playing Siege Rhinos now sometimes.
yeah, so a Siege Rhino, Archangel of Thune, Kitchen Finks, Gavinny Township. I mean, I lost games just to that, where we didn't even see a Birthing Pod. I think even one opponent said he boarded them out because he just didn't want to deal with all my discard. It isn't going to stop the deck. Whereas I feel like I'm on banned Treasure Cruise, obviously, and I feel like taking away Treasure Cruise really would neuter that deck. But that deck really needs Treasure Cruise to keep it going. I used to play against Delver. I'm a Jund player. I'm a Rock player myself. When I used to play Delver before, it wasn't very hard. You'd be like, oh, Thoughtseize Delver, I win. They just couldn't refresh their hand like that. But I was playing against opponents the second day. I came back on Sunday for side events. I was playing against Delver opponents that were treasure cruising on turn 3.
That's
And it's just
gross.
like you can't keep up with that. It's just absurd. And seeing Treasure Cruise be splashed the way that it is, like you're seeing Storm use it now and
Yeah.
Burn use it now. Junk, there was a
I
junk
saw that
list.
junk deck you posted. That was
There
ridiculous.
was a junk deck that had used it. Even Willy Edel, when he before Worlds, he did some online play, and he did the same thing. He took a junk deck or a Jund deck, threw in 4 Treasure Cruise, and went 4-0. And it really is that simple, and it's just very scary. And I think the thing that seals the deal more than anything is that the people who use it admit that it's stupid. Like, I was playing against people, like my friend Natalia was playing that, and she was goldfishing before she went to bed Friday night, and she was like, Aaron, this deck is dumb. And I didn't understand what she meant. And I was like, well, just pick a new deck then. And she was like, no. She was like, I'm goldfishing and I can keep just about anything. She's like, I do not have bad draws. I'm convinced I could, even if I had a sketchy hand, I could very easily fix it. She's like, this is just stupid. And every Delver player I face, when they would start cruising, they would kind of look at me and be like, yeah, I know. And I think that says something when even people will admit that what they're playing is silly. Because not many people will humble themselves like that. They'll be like, oh, it's not so bad. But they're even going, yeah, this is a little absurd.
Yeah, I knew mono black players in Standard last season who would have that same reaction,
Yeah.
which makes me think something is wrong.
Yeah, so I do think I would like to see Treasure Cruise go personally. If I felt like, banning Pod would really take care of it, I would say that. But I just don't think it will. I agree with you though. I do think I'd like to see some unbannings. Obviously, I think Bloodbraid Elf would be cool. And I think there's been talk of like Golgari Grave Troll, Stoneforge Mystic even was brought up as possibly something. The bottom line is I just think something has to change. I don't care if it's a banning, an unbanning. I just don't think it can stay the way that it is.
I mean, the same several decks have been performing well at the same the last several tournaments. So I would like to see something to shake the format up. I mean, I was also looking through some of the cards that had come out recently, and I'm wondering if Jeskai Ascendancy could see a ban. Not necessarily because the Jeskai Ascendancy decks are doing especially well lately, but I was it reminded me of the rationale that Wizards used when they banned Seething Song 2 years ago. They were saying, sort of in the little write-up, that it wasn't necessarily that Storm was a dominant, was like the most popular deck, or it was that it was oppressively good or anything. But it was a top tier deck that could consistently win on or before turn three. And that's not what Wizards wants out of the modern format. And I see a similar thing with the Jeskai Ascendancy decks, and I'm wondering if that card might be banned for the same reason.
Yeah, I agree. I also think, you know, Jeskai Ascendancy is something that isn't easy to pilot. So I think that might be part of the reason why we're not seeing much of it. But in the hands of a good pilot, it's scary. And I do worry about, you know, I think about that, how many people could be just spending their days practicing, because you really can kind of goldfish it, and just how many people are really waiting to get good with it, and then, oh man, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were your thoughts when you, I don't know if you heard this at all, but, you know, I heard that Wizards just doesn't test the Eternal formats, and that's how Treasure Cruise sort of fell under the radar. Like, am I the only one that thought that that didn't sound right? Like, that wasn't cool.
I don't know. I didn't hear the bit about not testing for Eternal formats. I mean, I guess they can only test for so many formats. Mm-hmm. They're probably most concerned about Standard, Limited, maybe some of the casual formats. Like, I see them making more and more cards with Commander and multiplayer formats in mind, so they probably do a bit of playtesting for that. But, yeah, I mean, when I first saw Treasure Cruise, like, my thought was, oh, this is Ancestral Recall with Threshold. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what it reads. So, I mean, that's one reason why I'm playing it in Legacy. Like, I'm playing Blue Red Delver in Legacy, and I was playing against someone on Monday night, and they said, you know, how do you feel about that deck? Do you want to keep playing it? Because I'm fairly new to the format. And I was like, well, I'll play this for as long as Treasure Cruise is legal in this format. Like, that was my response, because Treasure Cruise is just really good in that deck.
So what would you do if on Monday Treasure Cruise were banned? Like, do you have a backup plan deck, or would you still stick with Delver
for Legacy?
For Modern,
I would probably look into, like, different either burn decks or tempo decks. Like, I've seen some decks with Geist of St. Traff that look pretty interesting. I know Jeff Hoogland has, like, a four-color Geist deck called, like, Snap, Crackle, Geist or something
sure
like that.
Sure does.
That looks really fun. Either that or, like I said, some kind of a burn strategy. Just because I'm not a big Modern player, and I want to at least try a deck that isn't, like, a style that I'm familiar with, like an archetype that I've played before. Mm-hmm. And then just start testing that for the next month in preparation for the GP.
Sure. So Fate Reforged is the next big thing, the second set from the Khans of Tarkir block. And so let's start off with the story of this set, because this whole block is just dripping with flavor and references to previous characters and things like that. So if I'm understanding this correctly, Khans was supposed to be, and I think Mark Rosewater broke it down like this, so Khans was the set where we are introduced to a world, and we get to see the world as it is right now. Mm-hmm. And the second set, which is Fate Reforged, is going to be what happens when a planeswalker goes back in time, and you get to see the world as it used to be. And then the third set is going to be what happens when the planeswalker does something or changes the timeline somehow. It's going to be the after.
Yep.
So if I understand this correctly, we're seeing all five of the clans we saw before, but in their, like, de-evolutions or, like, previous forms.
Yep.
Okay. And one thing I noticed is that the genders are swapped, so the clans that had female leaders now have male leaders, and vice versa. So
yeah, it was something that I noticed also.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. And we have the five clans. I was a little disappointed. I was under the impression that we were going to get the other color combinations, like Bant and Jund and Esper, and apparently it's just these five.
Hmm.
Okay, so I didn't know that, so I was a little bummed. But the clans that we know are back, and Temur still has Ferocious in terms of mechanics. Sultai still has Delve. Jeskai still has Prowess. But Abzan has something new called Bolster.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm understanding this correctly, it's choose a creature with the least toughness among creatures you control and put a +1/+1 counter on it. What do you think about Abzan being so reliant on counters? Like, did you like that in Limited? Because I think they had that before.
I didn't mind it so much. I actually didn't get that many chances to play Abzan Unlimited because it was so popular that it was just never open when I drafted it. And so I played a lot of Teemer and a lot of Sultai because that's what was open whenever I drafted cons. But when I did play Abzan, I mean, I valued cards like Feat of Resistance and Dragonscale Boon very highly because those were cards that could put a +1/+1 counter on something at instant speed, which could throw your opponent off, especially if you had like the Einok Bonkin, Marek Nightblade, like First Strike and Death Touch thing going.
Yeah.
So Bolster is really cool that it will work with Outlast very well. So you can really surprise your opponent with it, and I think that's cool. One thing to note is that if you cast a spell that has bolster on it, or that says that it's going to bolster a creature. It bolsters upon resolution. So let's say that you have two creatures in play, and your opponent, and you cast a spell that has bolster, and your opponent kills the smaller creature in response to you casting that spell. The spell will resolve and then check to see what creatures are on the board and bolster the other creature. If there's another creature on the board instead. So that's one cool thing to know.
Yeah. I like Bolster better than Outlast. I think the number one complaint I had about Outlast was it was sorcery speed. And there were so many times where it would have made a really great mana sink, where, like, you know, you're sitting there, you've got all these untapped lands, and, you know, you were kind of waiting to see what your opponent would do, and they're not doing anything, and you can't use it. So this seems to be a little more flexible.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. The Mardu have a new mechanic called Dash. I'm not quite sure I get this.
So with Dash, instead of just casting the creature and having it stick around on the battlefield like you normally would, you pay its Dash cost, which I think in most cases is cheaper than the casting cost. And the creature has haste when it comes onto the battlefield, so it can attack immediately. But at the end of the turn, you have to return it to your hand.
Okay.
So if you need to get a lot of damage in, like if the game is sort of drawing to a close and you're in like a stalemate and you need to get damage in, or if the creature, like, there are some creatures that will like have your opponent lose life or take damage when they attack, or that will have certain effects when a creature attacks, Dash is useful for that, or it's useful for triggering raid, which is going to play with when you draft Fate with cons. So that's kind of cool. It definitely is frustrating to have to keep paying that dash cost over and over and over again to get that creature onto the battlefield and attacking. But I don't know. I'll see how I feel about it when I actually play with it. Like, the cards don't seem that interesting to me right now, but they could grow on me. So I'm trying to keep an open mind.
Yeah, my first thought when I saw Dash was that it might be good against decks that have sorcery speed removal, where it could be because, you know, they have to deal with it on your turn, and maybe they're not able to do that.
Oh, yeah,
that's a good point. And that way, you know, the creature isn't just like, let's say your opponent taps out. And then you go, and you're like, okay, well, I can wait for them to untap, where I know they're going to have something to deal with this, or I can get in while I can, bounce it back, and just find those little windows to sneak in damage.
Right, yeah, that's a good point, especially since, like, most of the dash creatures are small, and a lot of the, like, debilitating injury was, like, a premium removal spell in cons. But it's obviously sorcery speed because it's an enchantment that gives something -2/-2. So like that's a good thing about Dash, that your creature can't be debilitating injured or anything like that.
So that's
a good point.
Yeah. And the we don't have Morph this time around. We actually have something called Manifest. And I'm not even frankly really sure what this is. So can you break it down for me?
Okay. So the way Manifest works is that Manifest takes the top card of your library and puts it into play as a 2/2 colorless creature. So
okay, now I'm interrupting you. I actually have a pile of cards in front of me, so I'm testing this as you talk, so keep going.
Okay, so you put that card into play face down as a 2/2 colorless creature.
Okay.
And that card could be anything. It could be a creature, it could be a removal spell, it could be a land, it could be pretty much anything.
Okay.
Your opponent doesn't know what it is. And it's a 2/2 that can attack for you.
Okay.
If the card is like a land, an enchantment, anything other than a creature, you cannot flip it up.
Okay.
It stays as a 2/2 creature on the battlefield until an effect would remove it from the battlefield, unless if it changes zones. If it is a creature, however, you can flip it face up for its mana cost, or if it's a morph creature, you can flip it face up for its morph cost.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little complicated.
Yeah, I know several judges who were on Twitter when the spoilers first came out, and they were like, "Yeah, we don't even want to think about this for another month." Like, those poor judges. Yeah, I'm just trying to. I admit I'm not crazy about it. What are you excited about this?
I am completely bewildered by it.
I'm just worried about the prep, where it's like, I can barely get people to bring their own dice to events, and now it's like they need to have a morph token and a manifest token and all of that. Like, it just sounds obnoxious.
Yeah, I eventually resorted to having a little stack of morph tokens like in my deck box that I use for limited. So I would just bring them to tournaments with me and sometimes like give them to my opponents to use, just for clarification. So now I have to have even more tokens with me. So that's a little annoying, but I mean, the art is cool, so.
Yeah, I also kind of worry because, at least in my neck of the woods, the pre-releases are pretty casual, where, those are the kinds of events where even the spikes will tone it down a little bit and just be like, we're just here to have fun, maybe win a couple of packs. And we also get a lot of new players who will come out for the first time to pre-releases, and, they keep putting these really, complex mechanics on pre-releases and new sets, and I just worry that that might be adding another barrier of entry to the game, where you have a new player who, barely got the hang of Outlast and Delve, and it's like, all right, here's Manifest, and you're like,
Yeah, mechanics like that are really tough to explain to new players, so I will definitely be encouraging my opponents to call judges over to explain things during the pre-release. Like usually, like if I sit down across from a newer player, I go through this whole spiel where I'm like, if you be happy to answer them for you, or if you have any questions that you don't think are appropriate to ask me because I'm your opponent, like feel free to raise your hand and call the judge. Like, that's what they're here for.
So now, what do you think about the lore of this set? So if I understand this correctly, it's Sarkhan,
Yep.
and Sarkhan somehow goes back in time. Do we know how he does that?
So he finds like a portal. He finds like a gate near Ugin's grave, and he goes through the gate and he ends up in like a time warp or something, and he goes back in time over 1,000 years into the past.
Okay.
And he meets Yasova Dragonclaw, who is the old Temur clan leader. And she's sort of showing him around, and he's talking to her about and he reveals to her that he's from the future. And she tells him that Nicol Bolas is on Tarkir.
And she's working for him.
Yeah.
Traitorous wench.
Yeah. So apparently, like there's this big reveal, and Sarkhan is enraged, and he turns into a dragon and flies off to find Ugin and rescue him.
And the dragons in general are back. One of the things about cons was they kept stressing that there are no dragons.
Yeah.
And with this one, we have either a rare or a mythic cycle and an uncommon dragon cycle.
Right.
Yeah, so if you love dragons, this is your set.
Yeah, it's actually really cool because I know like there are a lot of casual players who are really into dragons, and dragons were only available in certain colors. But now there are dragons in every color. Like there's an uncommon dragon in every color. So that's pretty cool for people who, either collect dragons or just really into them as a tribe in Magic.
I was particularly interested in the dragons because I noticed that some of them were female, and more importantly, Doug Beyer, who is the, I don't know what exactly his position is, but he deals a lot with the storyline and the settings and things like that. And somebody had asked him about characters being of different genders, and he had made a comment that the dragon genders were not set in stone, that they might be a little flexible or a little fluid. And I find that so fascinating because I came from World of Warcraft, where you very clearly had female dragons, and they had broods and eggs and they whelps and many whelps. And I'm curious to see how they handle that with the dragons here, like if they're gender neutral or I wonder how that's going to go down.
I guess we'll have to wait and see for we'll have to see what's coming in the next set. It seems like there's going to be a big reveal there related to the dragons.
Yeah. And one of the achievement cards that was spoiled indicates that Sarkhan saves Ugin and locks him in a Hedron so he can heal. Okay, so from what I gather, Ugin will be saved. And what do you think that means? Like, what do you think we're going to be experiencing in the third set?
I don't know. I mean, just based on both like the name of the set and all the different modal cards that we've seen where they say like choose cons and you get this effect or choose dragons and get this effect. It makes me think that, you know, cons was a world ruled by people with no dragons, and maybe Dragons of Tarkir is going to be a world ruled by dragons, but devoid of people. So that's my prediction. I don't know.
So do you think that is this something that we can classify as like a good guy, bad guy? Like, can we say that Ugin is a good guy? Can we say that, you know, him being saved is a good thing, or do you think this is all a bad idea?
I don't know. I mean, Sarkhan is obsessed with Ugin. He's this voice in his head, so he thinks that, you know, he obviously wants to save him, but I mean, who are we to know if Ugin is, you know, a reliable narrator or not? I don't know. Like,
Is he worse than Bolas?
I don't know.
I can see it going that way, you know, because for so long Bolas has been the big bad, and I'm curious to see if there isn't a bigger bad. You know, we're so convinced that, you know, there's nothing worse than Bolas, and
Oh,
oh.
wait. There's more.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm excited. You know, I'm more excited about this storyline than I was about Theros. And, you know, hopefully, I've never been too attached to Sarkhan as a character, but I hope that they do him a little more justice than they did with Elsbeth and Theros.
Yeah, definitely.
Just a little bitter about that. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. I'm particularly hooked on the storyline. So.
Cool.
So now it's time to talk about our favorite card. So typically I ask you what your favorite card is in every color, and we dish about that. So let's start off with white. What white card are you looking forward to?
The white card I'm looking forward to the most is the card that I'm looking forward to the most in this set, and that's Monastery Mentor.
Oh no.
That card is gross, and I'm looking forward to making tons and tons of tokens with
They're
it.
calling him Old Pyromancer.
Oh, nice.
That's a scary card. Like I can see. I think if somebody doesn't do something with that, that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it can help. I think the Jeskai Tokens deck is going to be really, really good. Post Fate Reforged. Either Jeskai tokens or like I've even been playing red white tokens for a little while. And I think both of those decks can benefit a lot from this card. Like it plays really well with Stoke the Flames and Jeskai Ascendancy and all those other components of the decks. So I really like it. People are saying that it could even have applications in Modern and Legacy.
I
So
could see it. I could see
yeah.
it. Cards like that make me wish Ratchet Bomb didn't rotate. Gaze of Granite, something like that. Just zero, casting cost zero. Were you excited about the Soulfire Grandmaster on that note? The lifelink, instant sorcery spells have lifelink?
Yeah, that card was really cool. It took me a little bit to figure out what it does. Like I kind of put out the bat signal on Twitter for judges, like, hey, what does this spells that have lifelink thing mean? Like, does that mean that Lightning Strike is Lightning Helix? And people came in and were like, yes, that's how it works. And the funny thing is, if you play a spell like, let's say that you cast Anger of the Gods, obviously it's going to kill your Grandmaster, so maybe it's not
You get life from each creature it deals damage to?
Each instance of three damage dealt gains you three life.
Oof.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
it kills
tasty.
your grandmaster, or it exiles her. It exiles her, which may be besides the point, but hey, sometimes you have to clear the board.
Man, that's delicious.
Yeah, it's.
And I think anger's being kind of underplayed right now anyways, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least you handled that better than some people did. I saw some people on Twitter that were like, does that mean Hero's Downfall has lifelink? I'm like, no.
Oh.
Like, I was a little surprised by what some people were coming up with. Like, I love my new players. I completely understand. But they were, does Drown in Sorrow have... No.
Oh.
No.
No.
Go
no.
home.
But,
you're drunk.
But your Lightning Strikes are now Lightning Helixes, and your Stoke the Flames are now War Leaders Helixes. So that's cool, too.
Oh, I don't want to face that. The white card I was interested in is pretty harmless looking, but me being a rock girl, and specifically a junk girl lately, Abzan Advantage, the one colorless and a white. It's a common. It's an instant. Target player sacrifices an enchantment, bolster one.
Yeah.
You know, one of the banes of rock decks in Modern has been Keranos.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing a UWR opponent or even a Splinter Twin opponent and they drop a Keranos, there's very little a rock deck can do about it. It just goes nuts. And we, some people had been using Unravel the Aether, but it just puts it back in the deck. And this is a really nice way to be like, sacrifice an enchantment. And, you know, having more ways to deal with gods is always nice. And it gives your team a little boost too. And it's instant. So I love it.
Yeah, that seems pretty good.
Yeah. So blue actually had some tasty goodies this time around, and I'm not even a blue player, and I was interested. What did you like about blue?
Yeah, so I went through, when I was going through these cards, I was trying really, really hard not to just pick mythics for all of them. So I do like Torrent Elemental, but the card I wanted to talk about was Mistfire Adept.
Mm.
It's one of my favorite uncommons that I've seen so far, and I'm really looking forward to playing it in Limited.
Mm. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, target creature gains flying until end of turn. I can see a deck like Jeskai not having a problem with that.
Yeah, that seems pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the that Torrent is nice, too. I can see the Torrent Elemental being good with Whip of Erebos.
Mm-hmm.
It's just never going to go away.
I remember when I first started playing Standard, there were some Esper control decks that had Mistraven as a win condition. And this card reminds me a lot of Mistraven, but with even more upside. So I'm sure that there will be a deck in Standard that will play this.
Yeah. The two cards I was excited about are both two-cost spells. Neutralizing Blast is a colorless and a blue instant counter-target multicolored spell.
Yep.
I like that. A nice splashable counter. It deals with things like Sidisi, Butcher of the Horde. I'm all for that. I think that's going to be a really handy little spell.
Yeah.
And I also really enjoy Reality Shift.
Mm, is that the Polymorph one?
Ish. It's a colorless and a blue. It's an instant. You exile a creature, target creature, and then the controller manifests the top card of their library.
Yep. That's
which
cool.
I'm all for. I know blue isn't really known as like the removal color. I know it can supplement removal, like red removal or black removal, but you know we had Rapid Hybridization and Pongify,
right.
And I think that's a neat little tool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So black. What's tickling your fancy in black?
So the black card that I was most interested in was Battle Brawler. Let me see if I could find that one. It seems like it would be really good with the Black-White Warriors deck in Limited, which is a deck that I always wanted to draft, but it was just never open.
They really are pushing the Warriors this time.
Yeah, there are a lot of Warriors in black and white in this set. So Battle Brawler... is an uncommon. It's an Ogre Warrior, a 2/2 for 2, so already playable and limited. But as long as you control a red or white permanent, it gets +1/+0 and has first strike.
Ooh.
So ideally, when you build your Black White Warriors deck, you usually have like some number of Mardu Hateblades, because those are really good early game or late game. So if you play one of those on turn one and you then play Battle Brawler, it comes down as a 3/2 first strike on turn two.
Oof.
Which, you know, it's pretty good.
Sounds good. Oh man, that could be tough to deal with.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Like I said, I've been a fan of Black White Warriors. I think it's a really good deck in limited, and I think it could be even better with this set to supplement cons.
What do you think of the Brutal Horde Chief, the 3 and a black, and whenever a creature you control attacks, defending player loses a life and you gain a life?
That was pretty cool too. It like I definitely played my fair share of Hellrider in Standard when that was legal. Brutal Horde Chief doesn't have haste, so that's eh. So your opponent does have a turn to deal with it before you can just start crashing in with all your dudes. But I do like it. The activated ability, if you get to activate it, is also really powerful. So I think, if there's a black aggressive deck in Standard, I think this will definitely fit in.
It's almost like a Hell Rider and a Blood Artist had a baby.
Yeah.
And that baby came out as an orc warrior called Brutal Horde Chief.
Absolutely.
Well, the black card I was excited about, I mean, obviously there's Crux of Fate? How am I
Crux
saying
of
that?
Fate,
Crux of
which
Fate.
depicts the epic battle between Ugin and Bolas.
Yes. I'm a big fan of black board wipes, as we all know. That was an obvious choice. The one card I'm excited about, it's funny how you said you had to try not to pick mythics, and I was more interested in the commons. So the card I'm excited about is Tassadar's Cruelty.
That's the mind rot with Delve, right?
Oh, 5 and a black, delve. Each opponent discards 2 cards. Oh!
That's pretty
I am
nice.
very okay with paying 1 black and you lose 2 cards. I'm
Yeah.
very fine with that.
It's a nice 2-for-1, yeah.
I've been pleasantly surprised to see people excited about Tassadar. Like, there are people that are gunning, like, they're trying to get him out on turn 2 and turn 3, and I didn't expect people to be interested in that card.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't completely understand all the hype for Tassadar. I at least looking at it for limited, I was thinking like I would definitely rather have like a Necropolis Fiend over this, and that there are more efficient ways to put even more cards in your graveyard. But we'll see if it has applications in Standard. I'm not sure, but we'll see what people come up with.
I also love that people want to use Soul Flayer with Chromanticore.
Oh wow, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, you have to find a way to discard Chromanticore, of course, but if you can and you delve to cast Soul Flayer, what does Chromanticore come with?
Is it like flying, lifelink, first strike? It has like 5 different abilities, like one for each color.
Let me just verify here. So Chromanticore has a flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, lifelink.
There we go. Yeah.
And I do believe that Soul Flayer is capable of all of those things. So that
Yep.
would be disgusting.
Yeah, that is gross.
Pay 2 black for a 4/4 and all of that. That's a bargain. How about the color red?
So for red, let's see. I think collateral damage is gonna be played in Standard somewhere. Even though it's not exactly lightning bolt, people are like, "Oh my God, we got a lightning bolt!" Like, no, not exactly. Have to sack a creature, but like there are enough tokens decks in Standard that some of them won't necessarily care about sacrificing a creature. Like they'll just have a board full of tokens. So that's a card that I think will have an impact in Standard. In Limited, it's a lot worse. And another card I was interested in for red was Mardu Scout. The little goblin riding a snowboard or the sandboard or
I've been
whatever
told
it
it's
is.
a, I was told it was a dragon scale.
Oh, interesting. That is really cool. I did not see it that way, but I like this card even more now. But yeah, so it's a 3/1 for double red, with dash for 1 and a red. And I know some people were talking about like, is red devotion going to come back? And I think if like losing Ash Zealot and Frostburn Weird definitely was detrimental to the red devotion deck. But I think Mardu Scout could potentially help it get its legs back. So we'll see if that makes a reappearance in Standard.
Sure. So the card I was excited about is Outpost Siege. All of the sieges seem like they have possibilities, or they're, you know, they could be good. And I know Willy Edel was saying that the blue one is going to be Jund's worst nightmare, because it makes targeting somebody a lot more difficult because the spells and abilities cost more. But the red Outpost Siege is 3 and a red. It's an enchantment, and you choose cons or dragons. And I'm more excited about the cons portion. It basically functions like Chandra Zero. So at the beginning of your upkeep, you can exile the top card of your library, and until the end of the turn, you may play that card. And I really like that in modern, even. Like, I'm thinking modern Jund, because Bob is not good right now, and we really don't have any card draw or card advantage unless we use Chandra. But Chandra can very easily be dealt with. I think she's easier to deal with than an enchantment is, and you just stick that, and that can be your card advantage. You're not losing any life from Bob, and it's every upkeep. I like it. So if I could ever, if fingers crossed, the Bloodbraid Elf,
Bloodbraid
Bloodbraid Rhino, like Willie says, if Bloodbraid Elf ever came back, I would love to pair her with something like that and just have a field day.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
And the dragon's portion isn't bad either. Whenever a creature you control leaves the battlefield, Outpost Siege deals 1 damage to a creature or player. So that could add up too. So,
Definitely.
how do you feel about green? Anything you're excited about?
Green was a lot harder for me to find things. There weren't too many green cards I liked. There was one, this is another uncommon. It's called Tamer Sabertooth. It's pretty similar to Summit Prowler, which was a card we saw in Cons of Tarkir, except it's a green version of that. It's a 4/3 for 2 and 2 green. But it has an activated ability that says, let me see if I can find it. I think it's 1 and a green, and if you return a creature to your hand, then it gets indestructible until end of turn. So that's a pretty good way to, get a blowout in limited. You can, block 2 creatures. Like, if your opponent's attacking you, you can block 2 creatures, one with a saber tooth and one with another creature of yours, and then pay 1 and a green, bounce your other creature, give Tamer Saber Tooth indestructible, and eat their creature. So I like it. It seems pretty cool.
What did you think about the Warden of the First Tree, or what people are calling the what was that called? Figure of
Of
Destiny?
Destiny. That card seems interesting. I wasn't playing during Eventide, so I was asking people, like, how much play did Figure of Destiny see at the time, and they were like, well, the fact that it was a Kithkin was actually relevant. So it saw a little bit of play because of that, but otherwise, like, it wasn't all that popular. And I'm thinking Warden could be pretty good and limited, but you're not going to see a lot of them because it's a mythic. But it does become a warrior, so if you want to put that in your warrior's deck and maybe splash green, I don't think the warrior's deck necessarily needs it to be good, but it could go in that deck for sure. And it's a good thing to play on turn one in limited. So and especially in a format where you don't have a lot of turn one plays, a lot of it is just sort of focused on playing your morph on turn 3 and unmorphing it on turn 5. So I think it'll definitely see some play in limited. I'm not sure about standard yet, but we'll see.
I recall Kibler was on Twitter, and he was talking to a judge, I think, and the judge, or judge or a designer, somebody important, and they were saying, you can activate the warden's last ability as many times as you want. And Kibler was like, I plan on it. So I'm like, oh no, he's gonna have like a 30-30 warden, and we're just gonna be doomed. So.
Okay.
Right. At least he's consistent. At least he's comfortable. He knows what he likes. I appreciate that. So, the card I'm excited about is a rare, actually, and it's a rare that I was excited about, and I was kind of surprised that nobody else was. I really like Shamanic Revelation.
Oh, is that the one where you draw a card for each creature you control?
Well, first off, I think the art is adorable. I can't quite tell what it is, but from far away, it looks like a cute little bear person. I'll go with that. It's probably not, but we'll go with that. So it's 3 and 2 green. It's a sorcery. Draw a card for each creature you control, which I think sounds great. But it has a ferocious part to it where you gain 4 life for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. So you're getting the card and possibly some life gain. I think that could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely put that in like a red green monsters deck in standard because those types of decks don't tend not to have card draw. So this could be powerful in that kind of strategy.
I really think that's, I think that could be a sleeper card if I do say so. So every time you and I do these shows, Hallie, I always ask you to come up with a what the fuck card, and it's a card where you're either not sure what it does, you're not sure why it's here, you just don't get it. So what's your choice for the what the fuck card?
The card that I found the strangest was the common dragon,
Which one was that?
the lightning shrieker. So it's a 5/5 for 5, which is awesome. Perfect size for a dragon. It has flying, trample, and haste, which are all things you expect from a dragon. But at the beginning of the end step, you have to shuffle it back into your library. So it's just like a lava axe. And then it goes away. I
Oh, what is that?
don't know. Like it's funny. I don't know that I'm ever going to play it, but I don't know if I'll ever see anyone play it, but I don't know. I have no words. I have no words. I understand that, there are dragons and like we're finally getting dragons at lower rarities and that's cool, but like I don't know. I wanted so much more from this little guy,
You know what's going to happen, right?
What?
I'm going to have you back on the show for Dragons of Tarkir, and I'm going to have to announce you as Pro Tour invitee Hallie Santo, and you're going to get there because of that card.
Oh,
You're
man.
going to be in some sealed event, some sealed PPTQ, some sealed PTQ, possibly a sealed GP, and you're going to be like, "Hey, Aaron, remember that lightning card that I said was my what the fuck card? Yeah, it helped me win. I'm going to the Pro Tour." And just, I can see it now.
I wish.
I can see it now. Well, my what the fuck card was a Goblin Boom Keg.
Oh, yeah, that one's really silly.
Now, like the art, I love the art. I get it. Goblins are quirky and they're weird. It's an artifact. It costs 4. At the beginning, it's not a creature. It's just an artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, you sacrifice it. And then when it is put into the graveyard from the battlefield, it deals 3 damage to a creature or player. You could just play Lightning Strike. You could
Yeah.
just, I don't understand. Like, I.
I don't get it either. I don't know. Like, all of these goblin cards always tend to end up in our what the fuck section. Like, remember when we did M15 and I had the goblin kaboomist? Like, what is with these goblins? Why are they always so rambunctious?
I just don't get it. Like I, but then again, I'm also the girl who doesn't understand the appeal of Ichor Wellspring, and people swear that's an amazing card. So maybe there's something similar to that here that I'm just not quite understanding, but I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean there are other cards in this set that I also just don't like for personal reasons.
Like
Like
what?
I listed a couple of what the fuck cards. Another one that I had was Dark Deal, which isn't necessarily like a weird or misplaced card, but it's just a card that I know I will never play because it's just not my kind of card at all. So it's 2 and a black for a sorcery. Each player discards all the cards in his or her hand, then draws that many cards -1. And like I used to play so I used to play a lot of Commander with my boyfriend, and we had like a Commander group that we would get together on Sundays. And like I'm not really invested in the Commander format necessarily, but a lot of my friends enjoy it, and if that's what they enjoy doing, then like I want to do it with them. So I like built a Commander deck, and I would go to these Commander nights. And my boyfriend built this Thraxamundar deck, and he decided to put Nekusar in it, which was one of the cards from Commander 2013. And it says that whenever your opponent draws a card, they lose a life or they take a damage or something. And so he decided to put Teferi's puzzle box in the deck
Love that card.
so that everyone could just put away their hands and then draw seven cards and take seven damage every turn. And I found it incredibly frustrating because the deck that I had built for Commander was Momir Vig. And I would go through all of these elaborate chains and like I would be like tutoring for specific creatures and then he would play Teferi's puzzle box and all of that would just disappear. Like my entire game plan was ruined. So I just don't like cards that have that element, like cards that say that you have to discard your hand and then draw an entirely new hand. Like unless your hand is really terrible, like why would you want to do that?
Especially with Delve being a thing now, you're fueling their Delve.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could do something like that and then being like, thanks, Treasure Cruise, and it's like, oh man, and then they're
Yeah.
drawing three more cards and not good.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of black cards, I was really confused by the Archfiend of Depravity.
Which one is
So
that?
it's 3/2 black. It's a demon flying 5/4. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, that player chooses up to two creatures they control and then sacrifices the rest. Why two?
I don't know. That's kind of strange.
I could understand maybe like one, like a Dune Blast kind of thing,
Yeah.
but I don't know many decks that are running more than two anyways. So if you say to them, you can keep two creatures, they're going to be like, cool, pass.
Yeah, like if they only had two creatures on the battlefield to begin with, like that's,
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it kind of hates on either tokens decks or like the Black-White Warriors deck, which will just kind of like rush you with a big army of creatures and then like play something like Trumpet Blast. But I don't know. Like I think this format is fairly slow and mid-rangey, and at least in standard, like I tend not to play out more than, two creatures at a time anyway. So I don't see this doing anything in standard and even in limited. I mean like a 5/4 for 5 with flying is still definitely a card you put in your deck in limited, but I don't know how I feel about the ability.
So you think it's something that you would play mostly for the body and not really for the text?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I can understand that. So what are your plans for this pre-release? I know you tend to be the person who plays all the events. Are you doing that this time around?
Not this time. I go to fewer when there's a small set. So I'm doing three.
I love that you say, I'm cutting back to only three.
Plus, like we have friends who are visiting from out of town, so we want to spend a couple evenings with them. So we're going to one on Saturday morning, one on Sunday morning, and one on Sunday evening.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we have one of my local game stores has something called a stamina event,
Yeah.
which sounds really harmless. You're like, oh, that can't be so bad, but they have it on Sunday at like 8 p.m. So you've probably been pre-releasing all weekend, and then by the time you get there, you're just so exhausted, and then you get a pack for every round you keep playing, and it sounds like a lot of fun. I don't think I'm gonna do that this time, but every time I see it, I keep telling myself I'm gonna try that sometime. So I think I'm gonna do mine on Sunday. I know the office was offering overtime this weekend, and I kind of wanted to soak that up a little bit. So I think I might do a Sunday one where it's just kind of quiet and fun.
Yeah.
And if I don't end up working overtime, then I'll do one on Saturday too. But I don't think I'm gonna do. I tend to be a two-headed giant person. So typically, I do the one on Saturday, immediately followed by a two-headed giant.
Yeah.
Go straight home, get up the next morning, and do the Sunday one. And I think I'll just do Saturday morning, Sunday morning, and not burn myself out. So
Sounds good.
yeah. So overall, you like the set? Are you excited about the set? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean it seems pretty cool. I am like I did really enjoy drafting triple cons. And so this set really had a lot to live up to. Like this set had to make me really want to draft it along with cons. And it seems like it has the pieces that complement a lot of the decks that I already enjoyed playing in cons. I definitely like a lot of the blue cards and a lot of the white cards for limited. So we'll see. I'm excited to play Jeskai over the weekend. Jeskai's my clan, so Excited.
I'm actually kind of excited about Mardu this time around. Like, I was a Sultai girl. I did play a lot of Sultai the first time around, but I kind of would like to try Mardu this time. I feel like there's a lot of tools to make a really seamless aggro deck, and I'm not the best deck builder, so I think, being able to just throw a deck together with a nice curve of ones, twos, threes, some anthems or whatever, and call it a day, that's kind of up my alley. So I think I might do that.
Yeah, Mardu definitely seems really powerful.
So, if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, Hallie, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Okay, so you can still get a hold of me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. I'm still blogging over at magicandrealism.tumblr.com, though I'll be updating it a little less frequently now that I'm writing for Gathering Magic.
Yay!
And if you search for me here on Gathering Magic, you can now see the articles that I write here.
Well, I am stoked to have you on Gathering Magic with me and everybody else, and I'm glad that you agreed to come back on the show with me. And hopefully, I get to see you sometime soon. I'm planning on coming out to Seattle in May. There's a Star City Open,
Oh, awesome.
so hopefully, I get to run into you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for coming back on the show.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And if anybody's enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on gatheringmagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can follow the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can follow me at Original Estrus, and you can email the show at thedecktees@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy your Fate Reforged experience and take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.